Welcome into another edition of the Dan and Victory podcast, only available on musketeerreport.com. I am Rick, Dan is with me, and on the other line is the legend, Brian Snow. Gentlemen, it finally happened, and I say finally, you know, people are acting like this was a drawn-out process. It really wasn't. In fact, it was maybe the most straightforward and clean coaching hire I can imagine, but Chris Mack is the new head coach at Louisville. It was announced today around 3 p.m. when Chris Mack met with the current Xavier players. He told them in the locker room what was happening. Greg Christopher then met with them. Then the players went upstairs and met with Greg Christopher again in his office. And then we had a press conference at Xavier. Greg Christopher kind of told us the search begins. Chris Mack will always be a Musketeer. All of those things. We'll start with you, Dan. What's kind of the feelings? What's kind of the emotion? What are your thoughts here now that the Chris Mack era is officially over?
I mean, it's sad from the standpoint of, as Brian said in his article today, that Chris was the most successful coach in Xavier history. I don't think it can be overrated how difficult it was to take Xavier from the situation they were in, maybe their last year in the Atlantic 10, after the Des Wells situation, after Samaje was leaving, or I guess he was there the first year in the Big East, but you know, a team that was really stripped bare of talent at that point, and going through a very difficult season and looking at the challenge of entering the Big East. And I mean, quite honestly, within 3 years, he had a team that finished second in the Big East Conference, that was a number two seed in the NCAA tournament. He made the Elite Eight the following year. He won the Big East regular season this year, which is obviously the signature and crowning achievement of his time with the Musketeer program, and getting the one seed as well. I will say that it's a strange legacy in some ways, and I don't want to take away from the achievements and all of the plaudits that he deservedly gets, but it's kind of weird that during that period of time, there were numerous seasons, three or four seasons, where Xavier was basically on the cusp of just completely melting down and collapsing. And it seemed like every one of those seasons, they'd pull it together and then make a run in the NCAA tournament. And then two out of the last 3 years with the best teams in school history, they quite frankly kind of choked in the NCAA tournament and didn't live up to expectations in the postseason. So I think there is a little bit of a bite to this, it's that Mack wasn't able to push the team over the edge and make the Final Four. But, you know, as Loyola has shown this year, you don't get a Final Four as a lifetime achievement award. You have to go out there and win four games. And sometimes that takes some luck falling your way. And X was, you know, a couple non-empty possessions against Florida State for making the Sweet 16 again and having a great opportunity to play a very good Michigan team, but a beatable Michigan team to go to the Final Four. So I guess that's where I am. I don't fault him necessarily for making this decision. I mean, he's entitled to do what he wants to do. It is still disappointing. I would be lying if I said it wasn't.
That was really well stated, and I'd also just like to add that your audio is on a different level tonight. Something cleaned up there on your end, because I can hear you loud and clear. I think the message board will be happy about that. Snow, any initial thoughts when, I mean, obviously you knew this was coming, but any initial thoughts now that it's finalized?
My initial thought when all this started happening and it became clear, I really just think it was time in Chris's mind. I genuinely do. He had a great run as the head coach at Xavier.
And when you say it's time, though, let's kind of like define that a little better, because people get so worked up about this. But I think to a certain extent, it's not that he didn't like what was at Xavier or people were rubbing them the wrong way or anything. I think it was more that just that if he was ever going to leave, and I don't think he saw himself at one job for the rest of his life, this was the time to do it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, your best recruiting class in history, you know, realistically just left JP and Trey and Sean, and obviously Edmund left the year before. So you're kind of, rebuild would certainly not be the right word, but you're a different team next year. You're a different group. You've only got one senior in Kaiser who's been a good player, but you don't feel like he's been through the wars with you, like a Trayvon and a JP have, who are three, in essence, 3-year starters. great players in school history. You know, I just think it kind of was just a confluence of factors where it just becomes like, you know, you melt down to, quite honestly, a team that is not nearly as good as you with your best player committing 3 turnovers in 5 minutes. Your second best player fouling out with 2 fouls. And your third best player not able to play because of an ankle injury that he suffered 2 minutes into the game. Like, I'm not saying he was some weirdo who's like, oh, this is just a sign. But I think it was just kind of everything came together like, yeah, it's probably the right time to go. And I think Chris, in his mind, feels that Xavier's going to move forward and be good. I'm not necessarily going to say that it's going to be Travis doing it or Pat Kelsey doing it or something like that. But I think in Chris's mind, he left Xavier in a good place.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. And I mean, to piggyback off of both of your comments, I think, Dan, you bring up a really good point about kind of the weird legacy that Chris Mack will have. And that was kind of always my feeling while Chris Mack was here, is that things never felt like they were on entirely stable footing, yet they always seemed to work themselves out, and Xavier was always in a better spot than you would, or at least the type of spot you would expect them to be. Whether it was kind of a down year where things weren't going as well during the regular season as some people expected to them, and people were upset about defense or whatever, then they pulled it together and make a run in the postseason. They'd play great basketball by the end of the year. Few other times they had those great teams, they don't finish in the postseason. I think that would have changed had this year's team made a run past at least the Sweet 16, you know, gone to another Elite Eight or potentially a Final Four. I think we don't talk about that and we forget kind of the shortcomings, but there was always, it seemed like it was always something to a certain extent over the years, and yet extremely successful on all accounts. I don't think anyone could make the argument that it wasn't a really successful 9-year tenure. I guess, are there any other thoughts that you want to wrap up about Chris Mack or that era before we move on to sort of what's ahead for Xavier?
I think it's important to note he was the right guy at the right time for Xavier. You know, Sean left. At the time, they certainly didn't know they were getting into the Big East. But Sean left a really talented roster, but a roster that was really combustible. Not anyone could have walked into a roster with Jordan Crawford, Two Holloway, Mark Lyons, C.J. Anderson, and survive. I don't know if C.J. was on that team now that I think about it. But Mark Lyons, Two Holloway, Jordan Crawford, you know, just let's be honest. Those are high-maintenance dudes. Those are really high-maintenance dudes. And he was able to bring it together for multiple years, and that allowed him to bring Big East players in and not miss beat until Des Wells got Des Wells. Like, where would his – would he have even had that one down year if his best player didn't get kicked off the team?
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't think so. In fact, I think they would have been pretty darn good that year had that not happened. You pair Samaje Christen with Des Wells.
Yeah, I think they're a tournament team with him. And I just think he was the right guy at the right time for Xavier. And now, honestly, and people will be mad at me for saying this, I don't really care, I think it's the right time for him to leave.
I do agree with Snow in terms of this did feel like end of era stuff with winning the Big East title with JP and Trayvon especially departing. It did seem like there was a little bit of a period after this season and moving forward things would be different. Yeah, I guess the weird thing about this, though, I was thinking about this earlier because I was seeing a lot of the overheated takes on message boards about people complaining about Chris making this decision. And I obviously disagree with that, although I don't deny people their right to have emotional responses to this. But this is a weird one because Chris Mack at Louisville is going to be a direct competitor with Xavier now as a Big East program. That was not the case. When Thad left Xavier for Ohio State, I mean, there's really no comparison to what the A-10 was to the Big East at that time. When Sean left for Arizona, yeah, Xavier's profile had been raised, but Arizona is Arizona, and they're also half, two-thirds of the way across the country. Louisville's right down the street. Xavier, no matter who the head coach is probably going to be recruiting against Louisville all the time going forward, and it's very likely that you're going to see Louisville and Xavier, assuming Xavier remains good, which we'll talk about later in terms of the coaching search, but It's very possible that you could see Louisville and Xavier playing second weekend of the tournament in a few years. So it'll be different because I always kind of rooted for Ohio State and Arizona, except when they played Xavier. I don't know that I'm rooting for Louisville just because of that, the closeness and the proximity and so forth. So I don't know if that's really interesting, but it's something that popped into my head.
You know, Chris might get mad at me for sharing this. I really don't care. This year at their team camp in June, it was right after the Ohio State job came open, and Chris didn't even listen to him. Like, just didn't even listen. And he had always told everybody he would never listen to Ohio State. He'd never go to Ohio State. But you never really believed him because it's a really good job that pays a whole lot of money. And quite honestly, it's not that high pressure. It's a really good combination for a basketball coach. But he didn't even listen. And one thing he said to me was, like, I'm not Thad Matta. I'm from here. I couldn't stay in the state of Ohio. And I also think in his mind, there's a difference between the ACC and the Big Ten. I think he feels that the ACC is a little bit different of a footprint than the Big Ten is, whereas Xavier works more in the Big Ten footprint, right or wrong. So I do think he feels there's a little bit of separation there that he wouldn't have had at a place like an Indiana or a place like an Ohio State.
I think that's fair, and I get that point. I also think, not that Ohio State is a step down from Xavier, but like, the Big East is ahead of the Big Ten at this point, you know, in time. Yeah. And they could go back and forth, but the ACC is clearly the best conference in basketball, or at least it's right there with the Big 12. Those two, I think, are clearly a little bit above like where the Big East and the Big Ten and the SEC are.
It's clearly the most prestigious conference in basketball.
Yeah, that's probably the best way to put it. You're right. And so I think there is a little bit of a difference there. And, you know, Chris Mack, it was an unbelievable run. I think he's going to be an absolute superstar at Louisville because he is built to be the face of a program. He is great at that. He is great at the publicity stuff. He's great at social media. And quite honestly, I think Louisville fans have been a little bit annoyed in the past because they didn't have that. They had a Hall of Fame coach who gave them all the notoriety and was totally visible, so it didn't like hurt them in any way, shape, or form. But they never had like the charismatic coach who was willing to do some of the stuff Cal would do in terms of kissing babies and you know, having a coffee with Joe, the fat bearded guy who's had season tickets since 1942 and all this type of stuff. Chris Mack will do those things. Like, he will show up to Dana's to do a podcast with two idiots like us.
Not anymore.
Probably he might. We just have to talk to him. We might have to pick a bar somewhere in between. We'll see. But he will show up to a
Racers
fan's
in Sparta.
We'll have to check the distance on Racers, Dan. But you get my point. There is that he's fully ready and good at doing the face of the program type stuff, and at a place like Louisville, that'll play so well.
Yeah. All right. Let's get on with the program.
Well, Xavier has to find a coach. So that process has obviously already started. Travis Steele, let's start with Travis Steele. I mean, at this point, I would be comfortable saying he's the odds-on favorite to get this job. Now, to be clear about that, I don't think this is a situation where Xavier has decided Travis Steele is already our guy and we need to interview another guy or two just because to make it look like we're doing our due diligence and he will ultimately get the job. I don't think it's that clear cut. I do think he's in the best position to get it. I think he has the most support behind the scenes from people that matter. And I think ultimately he will be the decision. I also think it is worth them going through this process and ultimately probably a good thing for Steele that they are going through this process before he gets the job. And it will be a legitimate process because it legitimizes his hire. He won't have to hear 2 years from now if he's struggling, well, they just handed him the job without going through a real search type of stuff. So that's where I would start things. What are your guys' thoughts with Travis Steele?
Yeah, just piggyback off that real quick. I do know that was one thing Mike Babinski had told Chris Mack when Chris was about to interview for the job was, listen, it's going to be a process. When we hired Sean, it was just Sean. And when it was a struggle for the first year and a half, people were blasting Sean because of the way we hired him, and I don't want that to happen for you. So I think there's still, while the athletic director is different, a lot of the power players at Xavier are the same. So I think that that is a held belief within the athletic department on how they should do coaching searches now. With that said on Steele, I think he's right there with, Mack and Miller in terms of his readiness for the job. Of the three, clearly Travis is the best recruiter as an assistant coach. That's really not even in debate. And Travis has run the offense for the last few years. Now, that doesn't mean I don't want anyone thinking I'm saying Travis is the brain. I saw it on Twitter that Travis is the brains behind the operation. Not even Travis would tell you that.
Right. Totally unfair.
Chris had his hands in the offense too, but Travis's responsibility as an assistant coach was to run the offense. Clearly, Xavier's been a very good offensive team. Travis did a lot of individual workouts. He's done a lot of what it takes to be a head coach without being the head coach. Now, that's the biggest step in basketball is moving from assistant coach to head coach in terms of the coaching ranks. Moving from number two assistant to number one assistant doesn't change much. Moving from number one assistant to head coach does. Instead of making suggestions, you're making decisions. So there is unknown there. But in terms of being ready and being qualified, to me, Travis is as much, if not more, qualified for this position than Sean Miller and Chris Mack were at the same stage. Does that make Travis the right person? I'm not in a position to say that, but I am in a position to say where he was at a similar stage to Sean and Chris.
I would agree with that. And I think, and I put some of this out on Twitter earlier today, so if people want to read that, they can check my Twitter feed. But I'm going to recapitulate
Dan's
some of that.
Dan's just doing plugs
point.
Now. I like it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to monetize here. I got two kids to feed.
We need to get you some brand deals. Maybe some homage.
Yeah, well, maybe I can go to Louisville and get on that Adidas teat.
That'd be nice.
That seems like it's a pretty good deal. So as I was thinking about this, there are four things I think that become concerns when you have a coaching transition that we've seen over the years at Xavier. The first one is keeping the present team together. Sometimes that's not a big of a deal because maybe the present team isn't that great or the present team doesn't have strong characters. But obviously here, there's a risk of losing some important pieces if the administration decides to look outside and doesn't hire Travis Steele. So I think that's a real concern. And also, there's only six guys coming back. And they don't have any, they only have like one official visit left. So if you hire an outside party and you lose some guys off this team, it's going to be very difficult to field any team at all, let alone a team that can compete and not embarrass itself in the Big East next year. So I think that's a huge concern. I'm not saying that should be the number one concern, but I think that that's something that Travis Steele clearly addresses because, Rick, as you reported from being at Xavier today, that was the tenor of the conversation between the present players and Greg Christopher. And obviously we've seen a lot of them post on social media endorsing Steele's candidacy. The second one is committed recruits. I don't think that's a huge deal here because Xavier really doesn't have that many guys that are either, and we can talk about this maybe a little bit later, but that are either committed or committed in future classes. And Steele has always been intimately involved with that process. So I don't see that as being a huge risk. The third thing is obviously staff turnover and relationships in future classes, but that can work both ways because Travis is going to get, obviously Xavier loses Mike Pegues, they lose Luke Murray, but Travis is going to get to put together his own staff. Some of those guys may have pre-existing relationships with recruits that may decommit from their present schools and come to Xavier, or they may open up relationships that Xavier didn't previously have. And an example would be, I think the way JP McCura made his way to Xavier. I don't, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think Xavier was that heavily involved with him until Rick Carter came over to Xavier's staff.
Yeah, they weren't recruiting him at all.
Right. And then the last thing I think is what is kind of just culture and readiness for the job. And culture, obviously, there's no issue with Travis Steele. He's been here forever. I mean, he's been here for 10 years, I believe. He's worked for Sean. He's worked for Chris. He knows the players. He knows the administrators. He knows the major boosters. He's dealt with the media in this town. None of that is going to be a surprise to him. Like, he's not going to get here and then be shocked that UC is a big rivalry or that there are certain boosters catered to at certain times or certain things that you're going to say that are just going to piss the fan base off. So I don't think that's going to be an issue for him. The issue is, as Brian said, and the one unknown with him is whether he's ready. And I don't know that you can look at this guy and say that he's not ready. I mean, obviously it's a leap of faith to a certain extent to put him in the head coaching seat, but he's been a top assistant here for X number of years, and he's recruited at the high major level for that period of time. So when I look at the candidates that are out there, both that have been linked to Xavier in a semi-official way and those that haven't been and are just sort of being speculated about, I don't see anybody that really makes sense. And so I think the stability of keeping Travis Steele carries the day. And to me, it ought to be kind of a no-brainer. I know Greg Christopher will go through the process because he's a pro and he wants to run a successful search and make sure that he doesn't miss anything along the way. But it would be very difficult for me to believe that anybody could present a more compelling case for this job right now.
Also, let's make one thing very clear. Athletic directors are like all of us. They want to get to the highest paid position and the most money and the most everything. Let's be honest. The athletic director position at a place like Michigan is going to pay more and be more prestigious than the athletic director spot at Xavier because it's got football and it's got whatnot. Greg Christopher, as human nature, whether he's doing it consciously or subconsciously, is going to want to show people that he knows how to do a coaching search. And if you just rubber stamp the next guy before you even go through the search, you don't look like the athletic director. So let's just establish there's going to be that because Greg Christopher's a human too, just like the rest of us are, and he's going to be thinking about his future.
Yeah, I think you guys nailed it. So with all that being said about Steele, you kind of start looking around, and Dan, I think you bring up one of the most interesting points, which is I keep hearing, you know, everyone's like, oh, you need a guy with head coaching experience. Xavier's a different job now than it was 9 years ago. I don't necessarily disagree that Xavier is a different job and it's in a different place. I think that's pretty apparent considering it's the Big East and not the A-10 now. But when you start going through, like, the major conferences, I'm assuming who these people want to look at, and you start looking at teams in the top half of it, coaches you would actually want, who is interested in the Xavier job, and who can you actually get? Who do you necessarily want out of these guys over someone like Travis Steele? And then when you start looking at the guys who are available and kind of the hot names that are currently head coaches at a lower level to begin with, which I don't really know how much that experience equates to experience in the Big East, there's not a ton of names. There just aren't. Like, there are several that I think would make sense to look at. I don't know how I feel about any of them compared to Travis Steele already, but there aren't, like, people act like there's just this endless number of coaches in waiting that have head coach experience that are maybe even in a major conference already that Xavier should be able to go out and get, and it's just really not the case. There really right. aren't a lot of names to look at.
Because it's very easy to say Xavier's program is in a position where they shouldn't be hiring a guy with no head coaching experience. Okay, that sounds reasonable to say. Give me a name, though. And that's really the problem. It's kind of like you hear in baseball this time of the year where people are like, well, the Reds need a starter. They need to sign a starter. It's like, okay, I agree with you in concept. Who? And all of a sudden it becomes a lot more difficult, right? So, yeah, I mean, when you look at who actually is out there, there's no obvious candidates. Now, I have a question for you guys. This is something I've always wondered about, and I don't think I've ever talked to you about it. But do you think that there is a difference, or do you think that there is a I can't think of how to phrase this properly, but let's think about specifically Travis Steele.
If you're
Travis
running dry out of that big thesaurus you got over there, I don't know what to
Travis
tell you.
Is an assistant for 9 years, right? And at least for the last five, he's been recruiting at the Big East level. And even before that, he was recruiting top 100 kids, at high major type kids. Is that a different skill set, or does it take different abilities or whatever than, say, maybe somebody who was successful at a mid-major level?
Yes. I'll answer that immediately. Yes.
Can you elaborate, please?
In terms of the high major level, everyone gets... First of all, at the mid-major level, it's like a bell curve. You know, you have the small percentage of guys who are elite. Then it gets a little higher to high major recruits. Then you have a ton of kids who are mid-major recruits. So it's actually not a bell curve. It's kind of just goes up. But like,
I was interested to see where that was going.
Yeah, my bad. I got fired up there and then I realized I was stupid. Yep. But like, there is so much higher, like the difference between the first guy on your board and the eighth guy on your board for a mid-major is virtually nothing. They're the same level of player. But when you miss a priority recruit at a high major versus the eighth guy on your board, odds are it's probably a pretty big difference. Let's call it what it is. There's a difference between Trayvon Blewett and Kaiser Gates. There's not that big a difference in the mid-major level. All your guys are about the same usually. So there's that aspect of it. And then also, you've got more hoops to jump through with high-major kids. And I know everyone's going to say, oh, the shoe company. I'm not even talking about that. Parents tend to be crazier. You know, coaches, both high school and AAU coaches, tend to be crazier. There tend to be other people involved. You tend to have to answer more questions. You tend to have to deal with more drama. It's just a totally different process at the high major level than at the mid major level. There are some coaches who genuinely do not want to be high major assistants because they don't want to deal with it. So it is different. There's no question about it.
I also think there is like a difference between just being an assistant coach and being a head coach, period, in terms of the amount of pressure. To me, like from an X's and O's standpoint and from a recruiting standpoint and that stuff, that wouldn't really concern me about an assistant coach making the jump to head coach. It's more about just how do you handle the pressure? How do you handle being the face? Like Snow said, it goes from suggesting decisions to everyone's telling you what you should be doing, and you're the one who actually has to do it and then live with the decisions and then take the heat for when they go wrong. And I think that's the part that gets to people more so than the X's and O's or how good is he at defense or recruiting or any of the stuff that we usually talk about when we talk about coaches. So from that standpoint, that's why I say like a guy who is a high major assistant to me has almost more relevant experience sometimes than a low major head coach, because it's just kind of a different world. You know, like what the expenses are and how you're traveling and all these other things, as opposed to the ball game is just a little bit different at the low major level. There's not as much on your plate logistically. So there's a lot of different things to factor in there.
And Rick, it goes both ways. Like for instance, like Travis Steele, like people say, oh, you know, Eastern Kentucky, he would be really qualified to be that coach. I really don't think he would. Travis Steele in his time has worked at Xavier for 10 years and Indiana for 2. Do you ever think he worried about a recruiting budget, a travel budget, anything like that?
What time you need to leave to get to a game on an 8-hour bus ride?
You know, like that's just stuff he's never dealt with. Whereas a mid and low major assistant knows what that's like. That guy's more qualified to be the head coach at Eastern Kentucky than Travis Steele is. That's just a reality.
So with that being said, I mean, Travis Steele, again, probably the top candidate. Brian, what names would you feel comfortable kind of talking about here in terms of who might be guys Xavier would turn to?
I think the three names that everyone's going to turn to are John Brannon, Pat Kelsey, and then the big Wildcat. For those of you who don't know, Sean Miller. And Sean's complex, and we're going to address this situation a lot on the message board. But I don't know that – I certainly don't think Sean's going to pursue the job. In fact, I'm 100% sure Sean will not pursue the job. I genuinely wonder if Xavier's going to pursue him. And to me, that's going to be one of the most interesting things to monitor. Dan, as a fan, I've got a different relationship with Sean Miller. As a fan, how do you think a fan would react to a guy coming home? Or not home, but back.
Well, I would have no problem with it, obviously. If the decision was made to go with Sean Miller, I mean, essentially what you've got is you've brought back one of the best coaches in the country and who's now at Xavier and, I mean, probably isn't going to leave again. I mean, probably he's going to be here at least for a few years. A guy who has already demonstrated that he's capable of having success here. And while at Arizona he wasn't able to take them to the Final Four, that's the knock on him. He won Pac-12 championships. He recruited the hell out of California. He's brought in top-level talent wherever he's gone. He teaches. He's so good as a defensive coach. He coaches with intensity. He coaches with a chip on his shoulder. I think that endears him a lot and endeared him a lot to this fan base. Once sort of the initial getting to know you and dealing with some of the crappy teams that he had at the very beginning of his tenure were done, I think there was a real affinity between Sean and the fan base in kind of the same way that an affinity grew up with Mac, although in a different way. And so I think people would be excited about it. The problem is that there's just so many unknowns, and I don't know. It doesn't seem to me to be realistic. It seems like one of those things that you look at and your eyes bug out and you're like, wow, that would be pretty good. And the pros of it are obvious. I mean, the dude can coach. There's no question about that. The dude can recruit. The dude would assemble an outstanding staff. And I think he could compete really strongly in the Big East. But the questions will always remain. I mean, what's on the horizon with regard to the FBI investigation, with regard to potential NCAA sanctions coming down after that? I think that cloud would hang over him at all times while he's here. And I guess I just can't see Xavier taking that risk. But I've been wrong before, obviously.
I it's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out. I think you're right in expecting it to be a long shot, Dan, but there are details and things behind the scenes that will make this one more interesting. And like Brian said, we'll get into more of it on the message board and continue to update as things develop. Snow, you mentioned a few other names there. What else stands out about the guys that you mentioned?
I'll be interested because Pat Kelsey, I've done some research the last few days, done some crowdsourcing, if you will. Boy, does he elicit emotions from people, both good and bad. And Rick, as we've discussed on the message board, he's got some powerful people who really like him. And he's got some powerful people who really don't. And I'm going to be interested to see how far he moves along in this process and just how it's going to look.
Yeah, I think we all knew before any of this even started that whenever the job came back open, I mean, even going back a few years ago when Chris was thinking about other jobs like Cal, for instance, everyone thought at that time that Pat Kelsey would likely get an interview. Whether he was ready for the job, whether he was the guy for the job, regardless of all that, he had made good enough friends in important enough places while he was at Xavier that he was going to get an interview. Plus, he's a guy that played there. He was an assistant there. He's from the area. He's a GCL guy. He's overtly Catholic. These are things that play well at Xavier, so I get it. And all along, I think everyone was like, yeah, he'll definitely get an interview. I'm to the point now where I think it's not just going to be a courtesy interview like, we had to appease some people. I think he's going to be a legitimate candidate for this job. And much like the Sean Miller situation, you have to talk about both of these guys because of their ties to Xavier, and those ties make things a whole lot more interesting. Again, the details of all that will play out on the message board over the next few days. If you sign up right now, you can get musketeerreport.com. First month is one penny. So if you want to do that, you can get a look at all this stuff as it plays out over the next month. Anyone else on that list? Or, well, Dan, you didn't. I don't think you said anything about Kelsey. What are your thoughts there?
Oh boy. No, I guess where I am on this is, first of all, being the lone graduate of a GCL school on this show, since Byron is not on this episode, I feel like I could speak from a position of authority when I say that anybody that conditions their support for a coach based on whether or not they're from Cincinnati or whether they went to a GCL school in the course of this search is out of their damn minds. And the thing that's so I understand it intellectually or emotionally because of his ties to the school, but intellectually, when you look at Pat Kelsey's resume at Winthrop, if this dude didn't play at Xavier and wasn't from Cincinnati and hadn't been an assistant at Xavier, there is absolutely no way he would be under serious consideration for this job. There's none. And that's the problem I have. And that's the conflict that's existed with a lot of Xavier fans through the years is, oh, you know, Chris Mack's leaving. This is the guy we thought would stay forever. Well, why do you want somebody to stay forever?
I've never understood that.
Why would you want that when this program has experienced so many highs over the last 30 years by getting the up and coming coach, by getting that coach during the upslope of their career? And then if they move on, they move on, and you go on to the next guy. You find the next guy in that. I'll give you an example. 50 miles up the road, Dayton, after they fired Brian Gregory, I guess he got a better job technically. They hire Archie Miller, a guy with no head coaching experience, a guy who was known primarily probably outside coaching circles as Sean's younger brother. And they experienced the best 5-year stretch of basketball that they've had at Dayton since what, Roosevelt Chapman, the early 80s. Then Archie leaves for Indiana. And this instinct of wanting the guy that will stay forever, all of a sudden they're not looking at the young up-and-coming coach, the next Archie Miller. They're looking for the high major retread that went to Dayton, that played at Dayton, that they can keep forever. And UD was a disaster this year. They're losing pretty much their entire roster this offseason. I don't know that this is a great situation for UD. So I don't like that paradigm. I think this is something that works for Xavier. Get young, hungry guys that are on the upslope of their career. And I think some of the mid-major coaches that will appear on Rick's hot board fit this paradigm as well. Get the guys that are on the upslope of their career, that are hungry, that want to make a name for themselves. And then if they leave, that's why you have a good AD. That's why you have good infrastructure in place. So I'm not a fan. I will be perfectly honest. I'm not a fan of the idea of Xavier hiring Pat Kelsey, especially given that Travis Steele is a candidate. I don't see any good reason to hire Kelsey over Steele.
I've always felt this has nothing to do with Travis Steele versus any other coach or this Xavier job search. And it's not even a Xavier thing, as you mentioned. It is a universal thing across sports. You always want to be hiring the young up-and-coming coach. It may not always work out. You may get some wrong, and it may be because they don't have experience. It may just be because they weren't going to be a good coach. They had flaws for whatever reason that didn't reveal themselves until down the line once they became head coach. But regardless, getting a guy with experience just because he has experience to come back or may already be set in his ways of doing something somewhere else, to me is a much bigger risk of just pinpointing your young up-and-comer, making him your guy, and going on from there. If they move on 3, 5, 10 years from now, so be it. That's fine. The idea is they each leave you in a better place than where they got you, and you continue the success and the ascent like Xavier's seen over the last however many years, a couple decades now. So that's what you always want to do, in my opinion. It's not unique to Xavier. It's not unique to Travis Steele versus other candidates. It's not unique to this area. It is just how sports work. You always want the young up-and-coming coach. And whether that will be Travis Steele for Xavier or not, I don't think people should get too caught up in the, oh, this guy has to have experience to coach at Xavier.
Rick, I think the perfect example of it is the American Conference. It's really an odd situation they have there. Their football is thriving. Whether people want to agree with it or not, whether they want to admit it or not, they should. Their football is thriving. And why is that? They've hired guys like Willie Taggart at South Florida, Scott Frost at UCF, Chad Morris at SMU. Like
Tom Herman young, at Houston.
Up-and-coming guys who are really good. Why is their basketball not? They're hiring all these old retreads. Tubby Smith, you know, Brian Gregory, Johnny Dawkins, stuff like that. And that's not to say those are bad basketball coaches, but like there's just so limited upside with those guys. That they're older. They don't have the drive, the hunger to recruit like you've got to recruit at a non-blue blood program. And for me, hiring the guy who's never going to leave, usually he's going to leave because he gets fired. If the worst thing in the world is, say, Xavier hires Travis Steele and 6 years from now he leaves for Indiana, or Xavier hires Earl Grant, and 6 years from now he leaves for North Carolina. Is that a problem? That those jobs would want the guy you got? That means you're pretty damn good. That's better than Indiana and North Carolina having no interest in your coach.
It also means that the up-and-coming generation of assistant coaches who are similarly driven will be drawn like flies to a light to that program because they know they're going to have opportunities. It's the same reason Luke Murray wanted to come to Xavier.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, part of this is you always want this ambitious guy who's going to believe your school can go out and recruit top 50 or better type prospects. A guy who believes you can make a Final Four at your school. A guy who has, you know, huge ambitions until it comes to himself. Then everybody wants him to want to stay put and be content for the rest of his life. They don't want him to have ambitions of working towards the elite job in college basketball, whatever you deem that to be. So, in my opinion, it's just the opposite. Like, people keep asking me, oh, would you be distraught if John Brannon left your NKU Norse to go be the coach at Xavier? I'd say, heck no. Like, I'm thrilled that he's getting offers because he's been awesome since he's gotten to NKU. He should get those offers. And because of that, now assistant coaches, young assistant coaches, I mean, Travis Steele was in the interview process last time the job came open. I would have thought he probably would have gone after it again if it would have came open this year before the Xavier one did. Like, other young assistants that are on their way up will now be interested in the NKU job because they saw what John did there. They saw NKU make a tournament and play well against Kentucky. It is, you're absolutely right about that, Dan. A couple other names here that I think are just natural names that will be on people's mind. Porter Moser, what he's done with Loyola, and Eric Musselman, what he did with Nevada in the NCAA tournament. Those two guys are definitely visible names right now. They're names that I think naturally will come up, whether it be donors at Xavier, whether they're already on Greg Christopher's list, or whether it's just speculation from the outside. What are kind of your thoughts about those two guys, Brian?
My general thought on coaching searches is, if a guy isn't on your list on March 1st, he shouldn't be on your list on April 1st.
Totally agree.
So if on March 1st you were willing to look at Porter Moser and say, this is our guy, I like the regular season he had, like I like the way he built his program, I'm all for it. If you look at Porter Moser and you say, look, they made the Final Four, I can't get with that. 2 good weeks should not shape a resume. It just shouldn't.
Yeah, like, hard pass.
Hard God pass on of college basketball because of 2 good weeks. Has anyone looked at his resume since then?
Who was that, Brian? You guys kind of got muffled there. Who you were talking about?
Shaka Smart.
Right.
You know, perfect. 2 great weeks. He was declared the greatest thing walking in college basketball coaching. Has anyone looked at his resume since then? So, like, I just don't think you should have. If the guy's not there on March 1st, he shouldn't be there on April 1st. And that doesn't take any – you could legitimately make an argument that on March 1st, you could look at the way Loyola played and the year they had in the Missouri Valley and the transition they had from the horizon to the valley and say, I think Porter Moser's really good. But it can't be because of the NCAA term. With Eric Musselman, NBA experience, but he's done it all through transfers. You have to think to yourself, is that what's going to play at Xavier? And maybe it does. Maybe you think it is. But I would think that's something certainly to consider.
What's your general opinion? Because he's not the only one that I had on my hot board that was kind of in that mold where they've really built their program by getting guys that are, for the most part, transferring from the high major level down to their current level. What's your thoughts on how that projects to Xavier in the Big East? Because obviously you're not going to do that. One, there isn't a level to drop down to. If you're not good enough for most big-time programs, you're not good enough for Xavier. There's a few exceptions where situations don't work out and guys, you know, kind of transfer laterally. But for the most part, that's not going to work. So, Brian, do you see that as a big concern or not really? Because these guys were recruiters at one point during their time as assistants too.
I don't know about big concern, but it would certainly be something I would want to dig into with him and figure out how he would want to run his program at Xavier and how it would be different or not different.
For me, it's a hard pass on both, and for different reasons. I mean, Moser coming into this season had a losing record as a head coach. I know he took over some difficult situations, but they were not in. But as you mentioned, you're talking about the Missouri Valley at Loyola and at Illinois State. You're talking about the Horizon League. I think he had a Sun Belt job before that And he just wasn't that great. I know he was an assistant under Rick Majerus, and that may have changed his career and started him on an upward track. But I just don't find his background to be that impressive. And as we talked about earlier, no experience whatsoever recruiting at the high major level. With Musselman, the guy didn't act like it, but he's 52 years old. I know he's got the experience, but like Snow said, I just don't know that strategy works at Xavier. It doesn't seem like a personality fit with what Xavier's accustomed to, and what sort of the powers that be at this school would expect from a head coach. Does that make any sense? I don't know. It just doesn't seem like a culture fit to me.
No, I completely agree. I don't think he's a guy that you quite envision as the face of Xavier basketball. At the same time, I don't necessarily think like that's, you know, should be the biggest thing you're looking for in a coach. I really like his style of play. I like the freedom he gives his players, the way he's assembled this current roster. And granted, it's a lot of just really talented dudes transferred down to him. But I also think it like the way he put them together with the four out, one in kind of thing he's doing and really spreading the floor and playing with that space and pace offense that's become so popular in today's game. He understands how to put together a successful roster doing that. And I think that works well. But I would agree with you, Dan, that overall it just doesn't seem like a likely fit for Xavier in multiple ways, not just the fact that he relies on transfers so heavily. Guys, I think just kind of wrapping this up, you look at what Greg Christopher said today during his press conference, and none of it was very interesting. He's not going to talk about specific names, obviously. He did seem to want to clarify, because there are those old USA Today reports out there saying Chris Mack was making $1.66 million. Not true. He was making over $2 million. He was making money that made him competitive with Mick Cronin's salary. Now, it might not have been the same money. There might have been other perks and stuff thrown in that made it feel good enough for Chris. But be clear, Chris was not going to be coaching in Cincinnati, kicking Mick Cronin's ass every single time they played and getting paid significantly less than him. That just wasn't going to happen. He would have been long gone from Xavier before this if that were the case. He would have listened to Ohio State or Indiana if that were the case. So I thought that was kind of not really interesting information, because people that subscribe to Musketeer Report have known that for a while, but it was interesting that he wanted it out there clearly, and I think it's probably because you've seen so many reports of Xavier paying 1.66, and that number is so outdated that it's good for Xavier to clarify it and make it clear they're paying competitive money within the Big East. One other thing that two other things that he mentioned that were a little bit interesting, he said he wasn't sure yet if there was going to be a search firm. He started out the press conference by saying that the decision was going to be made by a small group of people in and out of the athletic department. And then he later also included that he wasn't sure yet if he was going to use a search firm. He's getting called by plenty of them, and they're interested in him, obviously. But that decision hadn't been made. So it was kind of interesting that he made that public and left the door open, which kind of made me, originally I was thinking they wouldn't. Now I'm kind of wondering if they might, which I guess it doesn't really matter all that much. It's mainly just to try to keep certain coaches' names out of the news. But that also kind of brings you back to things like the Sean Miller situation.
I think that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, it kind of makes you wonder, like, okay, well, there must be a couple, like, maybe higher-level head coaches that they're going after if they decide to use a search firm. Because I don't, like, you know, John Brannan is going to be connected to this job regardless, and it wouldn't really matter. You know, like, it's NKU is, I'm sure, isn't happy, but like, no one's going to really care ultimately if he's getting interest. And same goes for a lot of the other low major guys. So that was a little bit interesting. And then he talked about a timeline. He said there is no timeline. We are just looking for the best coach we can find. And he said whether that's 7 days or 14 days, I'm not going to put a cap on that. It is just find the best guy. Brian, I'm interested on your thoughts on that, because I very much feel like this pretty much needs to be done in 2 weeks. It doesn't have to, but if you get it done within 2 weeks, you're putting yourself a week out from the first evaluation period. Do you feel like that's a big deal to have a coach in place for that? Because I do.
Yeah, and honestly, I think 2 weeks is too long. If it takes that long, I would wonder what the hell's going on. Chris was hired after 9 days, and Xavier didn't have really any prep time, and they didn't have the benefit of the Final Four where everyone's going to be in one place to do all their interviews. I would say if it lasts longer than 7 days, then really something confusing is happening, because there's no real reason it should. But as you say, they need to get this going as quickly as possible. When you have six guys returning on your roster and you have a fifth-year transfer who signed scholarship papers but not a letter of intent and is free to leave whenever he wants, Nevin Boudreau, like, you're running out of bodies. You need bodies. And the longer this takes, the worse Boudreau is already to accumulate bodies.
Yeah, and Boudreau has already announced he's reopening. I mean, he's not coming to Xavier. So
I mean, he might. I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying,
Guys. I think it was already reported that he's going to Louisville, or at least that he was offered Louisville.
He was offered a scholarship at Louisville.
Okay, so I would imagine that's where he's going to end up. He committed because of Luke Murray mostly, and also the combination of Luke Murray and Chris Mack. And if they're at Louisville and he's got an offer from them, I would imagine that's where he's going.
Keep in mind, academics are really, really important there. I don't know what Louisville's program business school's like.
No, they're not. They are the least important thing to him, because the kid graduated in 3 years from Dartmouth. If he was worried about his education, he would not be transferring away from Dartmouth, where his mom's like the president. This is strictly a basketball decision. He laughed at Xavier when they started to show him classes and the academic advisor, because he simply does not care. So,
but Snow is exactly right. I mean, you have six returning players. You have three signed recruits. Who knows how many of those make it to campus? I guess it would depend almost entirely on who is hired, but the odds of getting all three to campus don't seem good, regardless of who's hired. You've got maybe a graduate transfer that maybe is in the works. I mean, there's some rumors flying around, but there just aren't enough bodies to field a team right now. I mean, the top five, six guys look pretty good, or at least the starting five looks pretty good. But after that, there is a lot of holes in this roster, and whoever is installed as the head coach is going to have to do a lot of business in a hurry to get into the season with a roster that's stocked enough to give you a chance, given how difficult the Big East schedule is.
Yeah, I mean, so that's why I'm saying, if this is taking 2 weeks, then I'm wondering what the hell is going on. Like, to me, you're not doing it's malpractice. From an athletic director's perspective.
Yeah, and that was kind of more my point. Not that it should take 2 weeks, but like I would think 2 weeks is kind of like the, okay, it took a few extra days because we were working on some type of contract negotiation or something. It stretched out a little too long. But like 2 weeks is kind of the drop dead deadline for me because of the approaching recruiting period, and just because of what you stated, which is that if it takes longer than 2 weeks, something is going wrong. So that would be my expectation to give to fans, is expect it to happen within that 7 to 14 day window, and probably closer to the 7 would be my guess. Dan, anything else that you kind of wanted to ask us about or get thoughts on after the way things played out today?
Not on the podcast.
Fair enough. Snow, do you have anything else to add to the mix?
I'm just glad it didn't happen on opening day.
Yeah, that worked out a little bit better for you this year, didn't it?
Yeah.
Of course, honest. I guess that would have been my problem now and not so
much. Yeah, it would
yours.
Have been your problem. I would have stayed at the game this year.
You can fire tweets off from your smartphone and get enough done.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, I think that does it for this edition of the Dane and Victory podcast, only available on musketeerreport.com. For Dan and the legend Brian Snow, I'm Rick. Thanks for listening, everyone.